Would you introduce yourself, please?
I am Taylor Locke. Pleasure to be speaking to you guys. I'm in my home studio in Los Feliz, which is over-equipped for Zoom calls because it's
welcome
where
to,
I...
Yeah, welcome to my world, right?
Where I professionally record music. And for the listeners out there, I will say that Dennis and I, for the last 15 minutes, have had a fabulous off-the-record conversation, and I can only hope that that continues starting
Never.
Now.
Not a chance. We got your L.A. band. That's that Rooney thing that lasted a while.
Long time.
You were with this other cool guy in it. You made lots of music. Your dad was a film producer who did 60 episodes of Divorce Court. I love that.
Yeah, he did, among
that's,
other things.
That's,
yeah.
I know a lot of things, but I like the 60 episodes of Divorce Court because...
He likes that too.
You got to figure by the end of that series, you're kind of like, how could I even be with anybody anymore? Like, what is there in life that's actually... I mean, you know, it's either like you look at it and you go, I'm not that person. And then there's that Mike Viola guy. There's that Largo place.
I don't know if you noticed that Largo.
That John Bryan has actually been on the show too. Yeah.
John's a special person to be around. He's been here in my studio before, and I'm not above bragging about it.
And you know, New Dad, which we talked about offline, which of course life changing as everybody. How many people have said the words life changing to you?
Yeah, they all do. It either changes so fast or so gradually that I can't even really pinpoint it. It all of a sudden, in 6 weeks, I no longer really can grasp what it was like prior.
But it makes you grow up.
Yeah.
But it makes you grow up. Starlight Bowl, Burbank, The Greek, Breaking and Entering, Clown Face. You know, so this is not the chicken egg question, because that's not relevant to me. What's really relevant to me is, ready? Female cantors with guitars.
Oh,
because I want to connect.
Well, that really, you know, really was formative, and I think actually that was the first. That's not like a stock interview.
So this was
for me.
But this was Hebrew school.
Yes, exactly. And that's not a stock interview answer for me. I haven't ever really shared that story before, but it's very true that pre rock and roll and pop music at all, I thought the way that they could command the room, command the classroom, or command the synagogue was just totally enthralling. The sound of the guitars and the singing and the presence of the guitars, and just it's the most fun part of the day in school when there is music time. And also, I will say, because it was Hebrew school, like, some of those melodies are very beautiful.
My Haftorah wasn't half bad.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
but the thing is, and I'm just going to say it, in a Me Too universe, because I can, because I've got a female, nice Jewish girl from the Bronx, so I can get away with being legitimate here. You know, cantors in general are great because, like, they can have normal lives. I mean, the great thing about being a Jew and not being Catholic is you can get married, you can have sex. And, like, a female cantors, this is sexy stuff.
It was a Reformed Hebrew school. It was pretty progressive. Yeah, just the presence of the big acoustic guitar and it just commanded the room, and I just thought
that's voices.
Cool. Yeah, yeah.
So let's connect that now, because I wanted to do a little religion back to Breaking and Entering. The record, you know, and the song, obviously. So when you thought, okay, you know, this is where I'm at in my career. I haven't made anything in 5 years. Notice I'm filling in the things that people normally ask you, so that way we don't have to go, yo,
sure.
So I haven't made a record in five years.
Sure.
Whatever. The point is, life is life. You're doing a bunch of things. You've done a million things. But what possessed you?
Well, in terms of the pith and the Nick Lowe of it all, it was an express goal of mine, and that also ties into wanting to share writing songs with Blue for this stuff. I felt that in the 5 years where I had stepped back and produced other artists who were new, young, on their first album or first EP or first song, that they had things to say that were appropriate and meaningful for them, and I was more in the position of craftsman, helping people maybe learn about chords they didn't know, or a way to get a sound that they had always wanted to get but didn't know how to, or etc. And if I were to reassert myself in the marketplace, if you will, as an artist, that I had to have an angle that was new and fresh, not just for people who know me or follow me, but new and fresh enough to get new people who may not have been aware, and third of all, and most importantly, have an angle that would be worthwhile for me to go through the effort. I had to really enjoy it, and I think that having done, had my experience at Largo, which you know about, and we could talk about more if you want, and also having toured with the band Sparks, and having taken a step back for a while, I thought that the thing I really needed was to bring my world of kind of humor, love of sketch comedy and stand-up comedy and comedy writing, and I needed to get that in the songwriting. And if it took me 5, 10, 20, 30 songs to get to a few of them that walked that line where I could live in that kind of Nick Lowe space where the songs are serious and that they don't sound goofy. They're serious melodies, serious harmony, serious. And also lyrically, there's a layer that is quite earnest and serious. But I felt that the kind of sad sack, Silver Lake, Elliot Smith guy.
Other Nobody people, needs another one.
They don't. Yeah. We don't. And you know what? We don't need another one, and if we do need another one, there's going to be somebody who's better at that than I am.
There's a dozen of them busking on the appropriate street corner at this very
Correct.
Moment in
and
time.
Some of them are very yeah. good, and I probably envy them in some way, or I'm jealous of them, but what I became sort of obsessed by were songs that would make me laugh, but not in, like, a Weird Al Yankovic, like, this is a joke novelty
not funny,
song kind of way. Yes,
yeah.
In that Ray Davies Kinks way or that Nick Lowe way where the song is so real and so beautiful and so serious and so credible and to be taken seriously on a musical level, but then there's a line in the second verse where you're like, what did he say? That's you know, and even a modern example would be someone like Father John Misty. So that is what it came down to. And Dying Up Here was a song that, as we'll get into, or as you've probably already read in the press release, Blue is very masterful, when it comes to songs that are, they're not vague or abstract. They have they're thematically focused. And I knew that if I took that subject and that title to him, that we'd get the right song written. And so every line for line is all reality, but, you know, it's heightened and it's twisted and it's fun. And then for the video, which I think is what you're getting at, the Starlight Bowl is like, for those who don't know, it's like almost an identical clone of the Greek theater. It's just as big, and it's very beautiful, and in an idyllic mountain setting. But it's city run or county run, so they don't get promoters bringing in, you know, pop and rock stuff. They get like school events or
right.
You know, they get stuff like that. And I went a few months back earlier in COVID to sort of do a stakeout, because I just wondered what's going on there right now. And I clocked it for a couple of days of when the maintenance and security people came in and out, because I was too nervous. The first time I went there, I didn't bring the guitar or the makeup or the camera. I just jumped over the fence and sat on the stage and like read email and called a couple of friends and just got comfortable with the idea of being in there. And then I started shooting it, and I had to keep going back because I'd be nervous and scramble out and not get a shot. But I was editing the video, and I'd be like, you know, it would be great if the camera turned around and revealed this, but I don't have it, so I'd go back and get it. And at one point, you know, it was like, I'm not going to be winning any awards for my
cinematography.
Right. Yeah. So do I even bother trying to slick it up, or do I purposefully let it live more amateurish to really drive the point home that it's kind of fringe and pathetic and illegal? So that's kind of the long and short of it, in terms of that song and that video and the body of work in general. I that theme, which also kind of occurs in another couple of songs, also plays into the playing Lindsey Buckingham in the play and in the tribute show, which is like, you know, a show. Do you know the Jesse Winchester song, A Showman's Life? I just thought of that.
Yes, right? I do. Yeah.
I like that kind of commenting on the, not that I'm ancient or retiring to Vegas residency type thing anytime soon, but I have been playing and singing and traveling on stages for most of my life now. And there's something, funny and sad and darkly funny and
about that business of show.
Yes, exactly. So, yes. I thought that was kind of a fun persona without having an outright character like a Father John Misty or even a Ziggy Stardust or becoming someone. I'm using my name and I haven't changed my appearance or speech or anything, but it is kind of a persona that is an exaggeration of me, both in the lyrics and in the performance of it.
Hello.
Hey.
We're in the middle of a conversation, but you can join us. Would you introduce yourself, please, so we know who you are that has invaded our conversation?
Hey, you invited me.
Yeah, and he showed up right on time, too.
I know. Who the hell are you?
My name is Blue McCauley, and I don't know. That's all I got.
Do you know how many times, and I'm going to admit this, you know how many times I've played I Won't Go Hollywood on the radio? Probably more than any human being on the face of the earth. It's kind of scary.
Well, it wouldn't take much.
When I checked out, when you sent me the link of your interview with Blue and I clicked on it and heard that, I had not probably heard that song since I first, you know, met Blue and became aware of him, and it sounded pretty awesome.
Well, I do want to point out for the record that, you know, I only co-wrote two of the songs, and
one of them's not on this EP, so one.
So I only co-wrote one song on this EP,
but
you directed a video for another song, and the other co-write that'll be on the next EP, you also directed the video.
Yeah,
for
exactly.
Song.
So anyway, credit where credit is due, and I think it's an absolutely brilliant EP that I listen to for pleasure, which, you know, there isn't much of that
as opposed to listening to it for pain, which is not really a good way to go.
Well, hey, that happens sometimes too.
But here's where we were, and I think this is kind of important. You know, one of the things, Taylor, you talk about is having a, quote, clean slate, right? And one of the things you said, you know, is about rebuilding a career. And the thing about both of you, you know, is you've worked with a lot of big artists, you've done pretty big things, but then you both have had to kind of, you know, repaint the room a zillion times as artists, because neither of you are going down that definitive path of, you know, and again, you've both written lots of pop songs, you've both worked with lots of, you know, great artists, but you're also kind of aware that, you know, making something like this and this kind of music in this day and age,
I would beg to differ a little bit in relation to this particular EP, which I do think has some commercial potential.
This wasn't like you sat down and said, okay, I'm going to write songs. These were, you know, you went through hard drives. These were lines from other songs. These were, you know, things that you started looping live on Instagram. This came out of a conglomeration of a pile of stuff that
stuck together. That, when I said that, that might have been a bit of revisionist history, because I had an inkling that I was going to want to do something under my name again and put something out. So the tune that we wrote, or both of the tunes we wrote, predates COVID lockdown. So I reached out to Blue to write these songs, knowing that I definitely wanted to angle back towards getting something out there. But then, as a lot of my stuff does, it does wind up in various stages of incomplete as projects that are more opportune come along here, you know, to sustain myself making music. But in the beginning, in March, when I was doing the looping and the Instagram shows and all that, that kind of kicked me into high gear of like, if I'm not going to mix and master and video and artwork now, then, you know, when? So that's when I did that. Right.
Production and sound. You know, Blue, we Taylor and I talked about the Badfingers and the Beatles and all that, you know, all the stuff. But this is layered. This really is crafted. And, you know, Taylor, you were kind of geeking out for me about the microphone and the processing and all of that.
Oh, for the Zoom call, I wanted you to know my signal change.
Yeah, but even for this, you know, you didn't need to be
an electric ladyland.
You went the polar opposite here, and not because you wanted to be old school, but because it felt right. Right? I mean, that was the goal.
Well, I think every time I don't make my own music for a while and work on other artists and projects and things, your mind is forced to get open to a different palette of sounds or a different process of working, and that feeds back in. So, I mean, maybe I'm not objective enough, but to me, I've never embraced new sounds more than on this batch of recording. So if it still sounds like the same old-fashioned shit, then I just cannot get out of my own way, because I was like explicitly trying. I mean, but that goes for, you know, what we were saying earlier about some of those artist references being kind of like in a little ghetto or a small club, like the power pop term being kind of a kiss of death. And I've always challenged myself to try to take what I love from that kind of music, but subvert it enough so maybe it is a little bit sexy enough for a young person who's not aware of fucking Badfinger to get into, because I don't really want to just preach to the choir, you know.
It never works, you know. If you set out,
and by the way, in their heyday, Cheap Trick were a really popular mainstream band that all sorts of like young fashionable people were into. So I think,
unbelievable when you think about it, right?
It's awesome to think about that.
Because they were subversive as it gets, you know?
Yeah.
They didn't try to have hits. They never tried to have.
No, because the end result is all that matters. I mean, we're all here huge Jeff Lynne fans, and one of his big signatures is this drum sound that is totally constructed piece by piece, but has a very old-fashioned end result to it. It's kind of like a nice cleaned-up version that's yet somehow nostalgic and reminiscent of, like, you know, early like rockabilly recordings or whatever. So he's doing something that in the end reads as being like quaint and throwback, but his means of getting there are anything but.
Totally. Okay, Blue, you've done this before. Taylor, you have not. It's time to let the music do the talking. I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich, and what it is two of your songs is the bread, and songs by others in between.